Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Michael Finney. Today I am joined by Spencer Cavanaugh. Would you like to say hello, sir?
Hi, thank you for having me on the show. Looking forward to talking about this.
Great. So let's hear a little bit about your background, who you are, what you do, and anything you feel is important that people should know.
Sure, yeah. My background is formally in filmmaking and screenwriting, but gradually I got more and more into not quite programming, but using certain technologies to help organizations set themselves up and go about kind of democratic governance using open source software and really censorship resistant technology. And that's what I've gradually built up a consulting practice around in this really fascinating frontier world of Web3. So excited to talk about that a bit.
Yeah. Have you worked on anything in film and screenwriting that we might know about?
No, not really. I mean, the only screenplay that I wrote that was made into a film was a short film in college. And then aside from that, I did some screenplay evaluations, but nothing that got any major release.
Yeah, that's still awesome. I'm working on a couple of short films myself.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah.
Know that.
AI stuff.
Have you written anything that was made into a short or these feature length or anything like that?
No. This is just a side passion project of mine. You know, basically I had written a short story like a year and a half ago, and then there was a competition that came up for AI short film. And I was like, what am I looking for something to turn into something visible, and kind of went and dug through all the old records and found something that I thought would convert visually and narratively.
And even if it doesn't end up as a film, I think it's an interesting kind of medium, storytelling medium, very visual and bare bones.
Absolutely. So inside of the work that you're doing in terms of consultation, Kleinemedic, right, is your company. That's where you are offering services.
Yeah. Kleinemedic has started out just as a moniker, something that like a Discord handle or a message board handle. And then I started engaging with people in the Web3 world and the whole industry of DAOs, started operating under this moniker. And then gradually, as things became a bit more professional, I doxed myself, started doing business under my name, but using the term Kleinemedic as my business entity, which I set up. So now it's sort of morphed from a moniker to a business vehicle to limit personal liability and to do business through. So I now do business through Kleinemedic LLC as a consultant.
Very cool. What does that look like typically when you are working with an organization?
So I've only had a couple clients so far, and what it looks like is like early stage startups or DAOs. If you think it's important, I can get into what DAOs are, but also mostly in the kind of nonprofit or public goods realm, very early stage, helping the founding group of people set up their kind of organizational architecture, like how they go about making decisions. Are they going to be voting on proposals? What does that voting process look like? Establishing all of that so that they have a legitimate shared reference frame for how to operate as a group of people productively. And so a lot of it also uses certain cutting edge technology like smart contracts and other open source bits of software to help build this kind of virtual organization architecture for them to operate with.
Can you delineate what is maybe a traditional organization and a virtual organization? How do they differ and where are they the same?
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of the time there's a group of people that start about some business enterprise. And then if they want to limit personal liability for the business that they do, they would form a legal entity, and there's various options there, but it's something that would exist for tax purposes, like a separate entity, and that business entity would assume the liability of the business that they're doing. And in the traditional world, I'm not a lawyer, but I've had a little bit of experience setting up these entities. There's you need a responsible party to deal with, to communicate with the IRS. A lot of time you need a physical presence in the jurisdiction that you have the entity formed in. And maybe that's you actually have a storefront there, or maybe it's just a registered agent. But in the traditional world, a lot of it looks like this. People are doxed. Everyone's name needs to be known. And in this more esoteric kind of nascent world of DAOs, the term I'm using, virtual organization, kind of has some meaning in the traditional world. It kind of just means this horizontal organizational framework where departments are kind of siloed and kind of have some degree of autonomy and just kind of coordinate as units in a less hierarchical structure. But in the broader sense, it's just any kind of organization that exists in more of an internet native fashion. So like these are with a lot of DAOs today or in virtual organizations, people are working remotely from across the world in different time zones without showing up to some shared physical place or office together. At least the way I'm using virtual organization is in that broader sense.
So what benefits do they get access to when working like this? How have you seen it play out?
I think it's similar to the effect the internet had in a kind of cultural sense, that you're able to find more specific niche-like communities of people with similar interests or temperaments. And it's sort of like you get to cast a wider net in terms of the people you meet and attract and get to work with and associate with. And I think with DAOs, a lot of people converge in this space because they are passionate about how this technology can change democratic decision making, or they believe in certain values of transparency because it's all happening on open source technology. And I think that kind of common ethos spread out across the whole world attracts like a much bigger kind of talent pool than if someone had these beliefs and was just limited to who they could work with within like commuting distance, I suppose. If that makes any sense. I'm not sure if that gets at your question.
Well, you know, the questions are really just a platform for picking your brain.
Okay.
You know, wherever you end up going with it, that answer is probably the right one. Maybe my question's wrong. Let's drill down a little bit into what you're talking about in regards to DAOs, right? A decentralized autonomous organization and its relationship to Web3. How do you see those things fitting together?
Sure. Yeah. So the term DAO has been used to describe a lot of online communities and internet native businesses that use pretty radically decentralized authority structures and decision-making processes. A lot of them hold funds in the form of crypto assets on shared accounts, sometimes massively shared accounts that hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people have a vote on how to disperse funds from these shared accounts. And all of this voting, whether it's for making some purchase or some disbursement, or just ratifying some constitution that this group of people is to abide by, all of this voting unfolds on a public, transparent database. In this case, mostly blockchains, but there are other solutions as well. And so DAOs in general are communities of people that use this open public infrastructure. You can think of it as like civic infrastructure or decision-making infrastructure that's public and very difficult to corrupt or censor. Use this public framework for coming to decisions, whether those decisions are financial or not. And it kind of opens up this whole new field of enterprise and businesses or nonprofit enterprises as well, which is where I'm a bit more interested. But DAOs generally refer to organizations that are built like this using Web3 technology, which is like blockchain and similar technologies.
There seems to be a lot of relationship with governance and decision-making inside of that. How does it typically function? Or if not typically, what sort of ways have you seen it develop or take shape in terms of those relationships for decision-making?
You're totally right. I mean, to me, the most interesting part of all this is the implications it has for governance and collective decision making. And across all the various examples of DAOs over the last 5-6 years or so, you've seen, you know, you can see the whole spectrum from pretty centralized ones to pretty radically decentralized ones that no one really has admin control over. And on the more centralized end, they kind of look like traditional organizations where there's some kind of executive or board-like account. In this case, it's usually multi-signature wallets. So for anyone who isn't familiar, that's it's sort of like a shared bank account, but it's permissionless to use. You don't have to get anyone's permission or any institution's permission to start one of these. It's very inexpensive. It's instant. You can have one of these shared accounts with anyone on the planet who has a Web3 wallet address, which is also free to make. And so what on the more centralized end of DAOs, it's usually a multi-signature wallet, you know, 5 to 9 people on a shared account. And it would just take some majority of those signers to agree to send some money out of that shared account, that treasury. And usually on the more centralized end of DAOs, there's that kind of shared account. And then there's the whole body of voting members in that community or in that organization. And a lot of the time, on the more centralized end again, the members are just voting to signal their preferences or to like ratify certain decisions, but it ultimately still requires the approval of that that shared account on top to actually send the funds or make the decision. So in that sense, the more centralized end of the spectrum does kind of look like traditional organizations just operating on more transparent infrastructure, you know, these open source databases like blockchains. And on the more radically decentralized end, you can actually have an algorithm called a smart contract that runs on these public databases, not only facilitate the voting of an arbitrary number of people, it could be tens of thousands of members in a DAO, but it can also hold funds inside of it. So instead of the treasury being in a shared account of 7 people, it can be in a shared account of 10,000 people. And in order for any funds to be moved, at least 50% of those 10,000 people would need to agree, or based on whatever quorum they set, maybe they set a smaller quorum so that someone of that 10,000 makes a proposal to send $5,000 to some counterparty, and the majority of people who vote on that proposal need to be in favor for the proposal to be made, and it doesn't require any kind of intermediary or executive figure to actually approve that transaction. And in this sense, this is still pretty experimental in a lot of cases. There's a lot of legal entity innovation going on to try to accommodate this, but it is still a frontier, a bit of a wild west. But the implications, I think, are pretty profound, that you can do essentially direct democracy at arbitrary scale now.
Yeah, there seems to be a recreation of traditional hierarchy inside of what you're describing. And, you know, I'm not super familiar with the operational level of DAOs. I obviously am familiar with them philosophically, and I think that there's some good applications for that. I wonder at times, because they are so distributed, how that interfaces with any one jurisdiction, or if there's maybe multiple jurisdiction interactions. Can you tell us how some of that works?
Sure. Yeah. So in my case, I'm based in the US for anyone listening. And so my experience with setting up entities for 4 DAOs now, they've all been US based with a variety of options. There's like the more traditional one is just to have some kind of associated corporation or LLC that the kind of the board members, the signers on that top multi-sig would be on. And then there can be a larger stakeholder body of members, whether they're token holders or represented some other way. And so in that sense, it can look pretty much like a traditional organization, but just with new technology to kind of expedite things in certain respects. But as far as the more diffuse and international DAOs that can have hundreds of thousands of members spread across the world, and how authority is delegated there and how entities are set up, I think in those cases, I haven't had any clients that big, but in those cases, I would imagine that there would kind of be these like satellite entities, sometimes in like Cayman Islands or Marshall Islands, or a lot of the more, you know, areas that you would kind of think of as being more accommodating for tax purposes. Or I think there's also some options in Switzerland. And so in the larger cases like that, I would imagine it would involve someone in some member of that large DAO who is either themselves a legal expert or is working with legal experts, and they make a proposal to say, start an entity. So like one example right now is Purple DAO, and that's, I'm not involved in it, but I'm watching it from the sidelines. It's this kind of social media DAO. There's this really interesting social media protocol called Farcaster.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, okay, so you know of that. And then there's essentially a lot of people in the Farcaster community that are trying to start this DAO to kind of not quite govern it, but to kind of steward the development of it and steward its ecosystem and everything. And there's an active proposal now to start an entity for it, for Purple DAO in the Marshall Islands. And then the proposal itself, if it passes, it would probably, like in ratifying certain decisions, it would probably endow that entity once it's made with certain authorities. And then that proposal, because it's public, will kind of be seen as some kind of testament to this group of people, this group of stakeholders, recognizing some kind of legitimacy in whatever entity is made there. But it's also still not quite clear how, like, what that means for members of different national jurisdictions. I think a lot of the answers and best practices haven't really arisen yet. And in that, like, that sense, like on a legal sense, it is still very much a frontier.
I was not aware of the existence of Purple DAO in relationship to the Farcaster protocol, but I do use Warpcast at least once a week. In terms of social media platforms, I think what they're doing is very interesting in the way that it allows for the content or the media to be distributed across different interfaces. Obviously, Warpcast kind of split off from Farcaster and rebranded because the protocol was going to be one thing. And it sounds like they needed that to happen because of the governance aspects as it relates to some of the other developers creating functionality or interfaces for the protocol. And now, in addition to that, the DAO that you're talking about, is Purple DAO the most successful instance of one of these organizations that you've seen, or is there another example that has gone further and hit a higher level of success with things?
There are a few examples that come to mind there. And also your points about Farcaster and distributed social media, I think, are really, really interesting. I'm happy to get into that later if there's time or if you're interested. But to answer your question, the big DAOs are mostly all the DeFi DAOs. And for anyone who isn't familiar with that, it stands for decentralized finance. It's probably the most prominent industry that uses Web3 technology right now. It's just a lot of fancy open source technology to facilitate like financial instruments and lending and issuance of synthetic assets and a bunch of fancy financial processes. And so the big DAOs so far are probably all the big DeFi DAOs like Uniswap or Maker or Aave that have some kind of tokenized governance and have probably an incredibly diffuse membership body across the world. And they all, I'm not familiar with which legal entities they have. I'd imagine they each have at least a couple, probably these kind of satellite stewardship entities or these foundations, like how, you know, Ethereum Foundation exists, or there's like a Solana Foundation. But they don't, at least to my understanding, don't necessarily control these larger protocols or ecosystems, but they kind of steward it and they kind of interface with the existing legal system in ways that an informal entity-less DAO wouldn't be able to do. But I would say the bigger ones are probably all the DeFi DAOs.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm, you know, loosely familiar, not a heavy subscriber to the DeFi community, but definitely like to watch it develop. And I think that they're going to get somewhere with it. Obviously, you know, they've had great traction. I think that in the face of traditional finance, there's a lot further distance to go in regards to solidifying that community or that space, that side of the industry against how people typically do banking or finance in a broader sense.
Yeah, you're definitely right in terms of earning people's trust, and especially the trust of essentially non-technical kind of nerds that are already at this frontier and using all this stuff and are able to jump through all these technical hoops and read all these technical documentations. It's still at a point where a lot of it isn't quite accessible to people, and the platforms that are really accessible are really just normal financial institutions dressed up in a bunch of new terminology. And I think that's like, there's a very, I don't know if I want to say like libertarian or anarcho-capitalist kind of strain to DeFi right now, and that it's resisting being captured by institutions and regulatory frameworks. But on, you know, the other side of that coin is that if you lose money through one of these things, or if one of these institutions just runs away with a bunch of depositor funds, there isn't always a clear recourse that you as a victim, as a financial victim, can take there, because a lot of these protocols aren't necessarily accounted for or enshrined in the legal framework right now. Not necessarily because they're trying to avoid it, but also because the legal framework doesn't quite know how to like deal with them or approach them. So in that sense, that's again just the kind of frontier Wild West status of these things.
So let me ask you this. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you feel is important to address?
We touched on some of the governance stuff, and I think one thing that's important for me to convey is that all this technology, like if you want to create a DAO, if you want to create a shared account and start using these and various other smart contracts and open source algorithms to facilitate business processes or business structures, It's all permissionless. Like, you don't need anyone's permission to do all this stuff. And it's pretty inexpensive too. Like, you can deploy all this stuff for a maximum of like $15, $20, depending on what the transaction fees are like for that day. But the difficulty is just how inaccessible a lot of it is, and how dense a lot of these apps are to use in terms of user interface. But I like one thing that I do find very inspiring is that if you wanted to create an organization with your peers for some purpose, whether it's nonprofit or for profit, it's very easy to set up these tools once you know how to use them, and you don't need to go through an application process to open up a multi-signature account or to start a DAO. And then once you have deployed these things, they're all very publicly verifiable and auditable. It's difficult to hide stuff and to be, to get away with funneling money out of these things. Like, you can kind of see all the maneuvers. So I think that's why I believe in it, is in the transparency and the resistance to censorship, and how it can let people work together across the world and send money instantly, pretty much. But I think the barrier to entry is still pretty high in terms of how complicated it all is to use.
Yeah, I do. I do think that the transparency aspect is highly valuable, and it sounds like there are good applications for the technology, for the governance methodologies, and the organizations in general. But hey, Spencer, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff, and did very good guiding this conversation across a variety of really complicated topics. So thank you.